The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. Thursday, March 21st, 2024. I am Seth Liebson. Mr. Bill, good to see you. You're to my right. David Dahl, my producer, in your chair. Good to see you, sir. Miss Terry, septent of you. Nice to have you. For everyone else, your barrier to entry is a simple 10 digits, 602-508-0960. Got a special guest in studio who's going to be co-hosting with me today, co-piloting this airplane. It's going to be great. But first, I wanted to say many of you are familiar with my updated list of George Orwell's Doublethink from 1984, that freedom is slavery, war is peace, and ignorance is strength. Remember those phrases in 1984 etched into the Ministry of Truth. Right? The Ministry of Truth, ironically enough. My list updated runs something like this. Speech is violence. Violence is mostly peaceful. Peacefully and patriotically marching is insurrection. Gender changing is gender affirming. Keeping hands off a body is having clinicians operate in your body. Wanting those hands off the body is putting hands on it. Color blindness is racism. Discrimination is anti-racism. Voter suppression means more voters voting. And building back better means higher gas prices for your car and food shortages for your babies and tampon shortages for women or perhaps menstruating men. Today, Konstantin Kyson adds diversity equals no white people. Inclusion equals exclusion. Anti-racism equals racism. And progress equals going backwards. The occasion for his editors is the story out of ASU and our good friend and regular guest, Professor Owen Anderson. Here's the story as Fox News writes it up. A longtime professor at Arizona State University sued the university on Tuesday over a mandatory diversity, equity, and inclusion course for faculty, arguing it violates state law. Owen Anderson, a professor of philosophy, religious studies, and theology at ASU, is suing the school with the help of the conservative nonprofit Goldwater Institute, claiming it is in violation of a two-year-old state law that forbids public agencies from requiring employees to engage in training that presents any form of blame or judgment on the basis of race, ethnicity, or sex. Anderson could face discipline from his superiors for refusing to participate in the DEI training, according to a press release from the Goldwater Institute. The complaint alleges the training discriminates by, quote, compelling the speech of public employees by requiring faculty and staff to take an examination following a training that presents forms of blame or judgment on the basis of race, ethnicity, or sex, and answer with Arizona State University's correct answers in violation of the Arizona Constitution. The training, titled ASU Inclusive Communities, teaches faculty and staff that white supremacy is normalized in society. Sexual identities are linked to power and heterosexuality, the dominant sexual identity in American culture, and that it is privileged by going largely unquestioned. That's just funny. Heterosexuality goes unquestioned. We'll return to that. And seemingly innocuous questions and comments like asking people where they're from or commenting on their hair can be racist, according to the complaint. The course also discusses how to critique whiteness and other topics like white privilege, white fragility, and the need for transformative justice. A day before filing the lawsuit, a new report issued by the Goldwater Institute accused Arizona State University's Cronkite School of, quote, forcing political indoctrination, unquote, on students by requiring them to learn about racial microaggressions and cisgender privilege in a mandatory course called Diversity and Civility at Cronkite. The course reportedly taught students that calling America a melting pot is a racial microaggression that suggests immigrants should assimilate, acculturate to the dominant culture. other phrases like, quote, I believe the most qualified person should get the job and everyone can succeed in the society if they work hard enough, are also allegedly considered problematic. Oh, God bless the Cronkite School. Do you think the students at the Cronkite School even know who the school is named after? They know all about the word cisgender, but I think they know little else. And that is journalism today. I once applied, actually, to teach at the Cronkite School. Before I did that, I looked at their faculty, at the whole faculty list, to make sure I was credentialed enough. And I was more credentialed than about 75% of the faculty, but they didn't want me because, of course, diversity, you know. If I can circle back to this point Professor Anderson makes, though, about compelled speech, forcing him to say and affirm things he doesn't believe, I realize we live in a world now where at least one Supreme Court justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson, believes the First Amendment was written so as not to hamstring the government, her words, but in a better understanding of the First Amendment, which is to say everyone else in the world's understanding of the First Amendment, it was actually meant to protect people against the government. Congress shall make no law are actually the first words of the First Amendment. As a better Supreme Court justice named Jackson, Robert Jackson, put it, quote, we set up government by consent of the governed, and the Bill of Rights denies those in power any legal opportunity to coerce that consent. Authority here is to be controlled by public opinion, not public opinion by authority, close quote. This, by the way, includes not compelling someone to profess or confess something they do not believe or is violative of their conscience. That is the stuff of Orwell's 1984. That is the stuff of Maoism and Stalinism and all Marxist-run countries and, of course, Nazism and every other tyranny. You cannot, in a free society, compel someone to say what they do not think. It's that simple, or used to be. And if you choose not to believe that the phrase melting pot is not racist, or that you have, unlike Ketanji Brown Jackson, an inkling as to what the definition of a woman is, well, by Jove, academic freedom and intellectual rigor and honesty, never mind the concept of an open society, gives you a right to maintain those thoughts and beliefs. I don't know how many of you remember 1984. But there is a torturer named O'Brien in the novel, and he forces the protagonist, Winston Smith, to say that 2 + 2 = 5. And it takes him quite a bit of effort to get Winston Smith to say it. And even once Winston Smith says it, O'Brien still doesn't believe him. It's no longer satire in America, is it? I quoted Martin Luther King Jr. yesterday at length, speech he gave at Monmouth College in 1966 on his renunciation of the notion of black power and the notion of white power, on what by any definition was his tribute to the notion of a melting pot. Were I or Owen Anderson or Sam Stone to give that speech at ASU today, the very words that Martin Luther King delivered in 1966 at another university, it would run afoul of the Big Brother enforcement of newspeak, which is a form of thought control. Let us not forget that. These turns of phrases, these inversions of the word's original meanings and phrase's original meanings, is a form of thought control. Once you control the language, you can control thought. Once you control thought, you can control politics and policy. But you know what? That's not what universities were made for, Charlie Brown. And 1984 was meant as a warning, not an instruction manual, not a policy and procedure manual. We say it too often around these precincts, but we find we have to. M-O-F-A, make Orwell fiction again. I often promise that we'll do a book study club here, and we'll just take a book over the course of the summer and go through it chapter by chapter and have fun discussing it. Perhaps this year we really do need to make that happen in 2024, and I'll propose that we do 1984, because what I think you'll find if you read that novel is that it's just too eerily familiar, and not as the warning that it was meant to be, but as an instruction that too many on the left, which includes probably 95% of the Democratic Party today, think of as an instruction manual. 602-508-0960 is our number. We are delighted to have Sam Stone in studio with us for the next 2 hours. 3 hours? All 3 hours. I can't do math. I was too convinced that 2 + 2 = 5. Sam Stone will be with us for the duration of the show.
And you are definitely not racist.
Anything on your mind, Sam Stone? I have a lot on ours. We'll share it with you when we come right back. Well, welcome back to this special edition of the Seth Leibson Show. It's special because we have... I don't know if we've done this much before. Maybe once or twice in the last 10 years we've had an in-studio guest to work with me and talk with me and speak with y'all for the entire show. And it's our good friend Sam Stone, who's usually with us in the third hour, but he's with us in studio today. Sam Stone is a political consultant in town. You can follow him on Twitter, X, Twix, at Sam the Paul, Sam the P-O-L. It's a great Twix account with a lot of interesting, good, and fun and intellectual stuff as well. And he has his own radio show, which is heard here every Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., Breaking Battlegrounds. So, Sam, welcome.
Well, thank you. Look, I'm looking forward to this because I feel like our hour every Thursday goes by, and
way
half the time we're like halfway through a conversation when that hour comes to an end.
I know, and there's so much to talk about. I've learned a lot already today. I'll tell you one thing I learned today that you probably don't know. I don't think young David knows. The Dirty Drummer has special Taco Thursdays. Did you guys know that?
They're
fried
tacos.
Tacos.
I didn't know it was on
Thursdays. Fried tacos.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Are we going tonight?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm just...
Get in the car. We're going now.
It's just as a public service announcement. If you like fried tacos, they have them on Thursdays. They're not on the menu.
Do you know I was out last night?
Oh.
I was at a thrift shop.
Yeah.
And I found thrift gold. I found a gold mine, an original Dirty Drummer, the 70s era t-shirt.
Oh, that's what you meant. Okay.
Oh.
Yes. I found gold at a thrift store, a local place.
Where? What place?
It's a place that might not have the same sort of politics as our radio station.
Yeah, most don't. That's okay.
If you must know, they're a chain of thrift stores known as Buffalo Exchange.
Okay. What did you do last night, Sam? Anything you can tell us? You were probably working on homeless policy or something.
So actually, yesterday was a long day. I'm that guy that goes to sleep at like 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I think I went to sleep at like 7:30. I woke up at like 3 a.m. this morning.
It was
ridiculous.
I know. You're the only person in town I can email or text. Really, we text. You're the only person I can text and never worry about what hour it is.
No, yeah. I'm up.
Yeah, yeah. Rick is in Phoenix. Rick, you're on with me and the great Sam Stone. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, and it's great to hear both of you on there. I'm looking forward to the program today.
Thanks.
Thanks, Rick. Both terrific. Seth, I've got two subjects that I'd like to throw out and get one or both of you to give input on one or the other or both. The first one is the blame game. I heard on Salem News on this station earlier today that the FDA is looking into and has determined that the exorbitant increases in food prices and the problems going on there are not a result of President Biden and his administration and their terrible policies. No. It is the result of the food providers and the grocery stores who have been consolidating and shutting out the little guys, and so they're the ones to blame for the terrible increases in food.
Okay. That's issue one. Yes.
The second one is the technological twilight zone that we seem to have moved into. Salem had another news story that there was a statewide, not statewide, several states outage at motor vehicle division places. And they don't know, there was something wrong with the cloud or something like that. They haven't determined what it is, but it created problems. And then, of course, earlier, a few months ago, we had the outage that hit cell phones in several states.
Yeah, the AT&T thing. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're probably aware of the fact that, KKNT has been having technological problems for months and months now.
Actually, I'm not aware of that.
Oh, okay. Well, commercials, ad spots, get cut off at the end.
No, I don't know anything about that.
And I know. I don't expect you to know about it because, anyway.
Anyway.
The point is that
it might be a receiver problem on your end. I don't know about anything about that, but we can talk about the grocery stores and the technological twilight zone problem if you want. I'll throw some of this to Sam. It is kind of interesting to me that at this point in time, being so reliant on the technology that we are reliant on, that we do have these problems. We do have these kinds of blackouts that just make no sense. And it sends people into odd directions as far as thinking, well, could this be a problem with a cyber attack? Could it be a hacking attack? We're not hardened, but we're also not good. We're just not good. There is this general suck about things. And it's not just what he was saying. It's not just grocery stores, and it's not just cell phones. It's airline flights. It's any number of things.
Boeing's
that just
quality,
yes,
control.
Right. But exactly right.
Yeah.
It's exactly right. It's as if that old comedian line, I don't really like her that much, but this old comedian Paula Poundstone's line about this is why we can't have good things anymore. There is this general suck we've become used to around here.
This was, for a couple hundred years, a society built on exceptionalism,
right,
and that celebrated the exceptional, both in people and in achievement.
Yeah.
In the last 20 years, celebrating the exceptional has come to be called ism. It's ableism. It's racism. Heterosexualism, take your pick. But basically this race to the bottom that the left has been driving our society to has taken away the thing that made us great. I mean, I for the first time would say it's hard to say we're the greatest country on earth.
Yeah.
Because what made us the greatest country on earth was not our natural resources. It was not our location in the world. It's not winning World War II. What made us the greatest country on earth was the exceptionalism of our people and the striving for exceptionalism and the understanding that there would be unbelievable rewards, mm-hmm, for exceptionalism. Mm-hmm. Not what we see today, which is envy, greed, and guilt. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it. I think in this world too, with technology, it's always worth understanding that your defenses are going to be breached from time to time.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about cyber attacks, you can't possibly predict every form of cyber attack that comes your way.
Right.
So you're defensive and reactive. But speaking of defensive and reactive, and I'll segue to the other portion of this, the Biden administration trying to use one of its executive agencies to claim that the increase in food costs has nothing to do with Joe Biden.
Right, right.
It may be, and I think there's probably some legitimacy that grocery store consolidations have increased prices, but you're talking about one factor, one small factor. Diesel fuel is a bigger factor.
Yep.
Heating and electrical costs are a bigger factor.
Right.
The food, the cost of the petroleum products used to fertilize and pesticides on that crops have gone up significantly. That's higher. Stop. Stop, Joe. That's just... You're full of it, Joey.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Sam Stone is my guest. Follow him on Twitter, X, Twix, at Sam the Paul. He's a political consultant in town. He's the host of his own radio show, heard right here every Saturday morning at 9 a.m., Breaking Battlegrounds, taking your calls, talking about a lot of different things and anything that's on your mind, 602-5080-960. We came in with the Dallas theme. I don't know if you were – was that a show you were keen on or attuned to?
No,
or was it a little before your time?
It was just at the wrong time.
Okay.
It was Friday night. Daytime show.
Okay.
J.R.
Ewing?
Yeah, I mean, I knew of the lore, if you will,
yeah.
but it wasn't something I watched. actually, interestingly enough, the boarding school I went to for a couple of years, the hockey guys were all huge into it.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, huge.
Really?
Yeah, they were all skipping out on class in the afternoon to sit around and watch soaps. It was fantastic. Like, them and the Golden Girls, bizarre.
They liked the Golden Girls.
They loved that stuff, man. All these, like,
that's an odd hockey team.
These 250-pound Canadian bruisers are like...
It's an odd hockey team.
Yeah, that like General Hospital, they were all over that.
Really?
Oh, my goodness. They were crazy for it.
Hey, right. It was George Clooney, you know.
Let's go to Heather in Goodyear. Hi, Heather. You're on with me and Sam Stone.
Hello. Thank you. It's an honor to be on. I just learned so much from both of you, and I look forward to this hour. And having a small non-profit grassroots here for homelessness and human trafficking, what is happening the last 4 years, obviously, you both know, has been astronomically ridiculous on the streets of Arizona. And then I'm hearing how we are now going to take our migrants out of these encampments, wherever they're being held, and dump them onto the streets of Arizona and cities. And it's kind of disturbing, because how are our first responders supposed to handle this, and how are the communities supposed to handle this? We have dinner time robberies happening. Like, what's next? And what is being done about it by our representative in our house?
Well, thank you, Heather. You are in luck, because no one knows more about issues having to do with homelessness than Sam Stone in town. And it's been the pleasure of the last 5 years I've been working on the issue to work with him on it. And you've made, and we've made some headway, at least when it came to clearing out the zone, Sam, but it is a problem that is ever with us, and it's driving into communities we never thought it would. What are your thoughts on it and where we are right now?
Well, first, Heather, thank you for the kind words for both of us. Yeah, look, this is a big problem. I did talk to one of the, community action officers for the city of Phoenix a few weeks ago, a woman I know very well from my time there. And she said, look, the clearing up of the zone allowed them to get more of those people into treatment than they had ever done before. So there actually was a significant achievement behind that in terms of getting people into treatment. But that said, a majority of them still just sort of scattered around the city.
That's right.
The problem with these migrants now and they keep, you know, this whole we're releasing them on the street thing, right, is as much of a threat as it is a reality, because the unfortunate reality is that there are all these now federal programs. Fortunately, here in Arizona, we have not had a governor and a legislature, Democrats, that would do those things here the way they have in New York and Oregon and other places where they've created sanctuaries and programs and handouts and rights to housing and all this stuff. We don't have that. What we do have are a bunch of federal programs that incentivize NGOs to house migrants over American citizens. So all of these people on our streets, I mean, to me, very simply put, if you have every homeless person on your street and we have a room for them every night and we have some way to work to get them into treatment and we can do these things, well, then if you want to start offering additional benefits to other people, I can understand that. But until we address our own population, I have an incredibly difficult time accepting the idea that we're supposed to address the rest of the world's poor. Mm-hmm. We can't take care of our own people, and yet we have this attitude from the left that we should just go on printing money endlessly and doing this. What this is going to do is very simple. This is going to put more Arizonans and more U.S. residents on the street, because all these shelter programs are eligible for the same federal pools of federal dollars. They're going to take that extra money for migrants instead of U.S. homeless people in a heartbeat.
This is a short segment, but what you just said in that answer has about five different spokes from the main hub of that
point.
I'm watching
the clock and trying to get through.
No,
like,
there's a lot there, and I want to pick up on it and deal with some of those spokes when we come right back. And it drives really, I think, to the heart of where the mindset of the left is, which is their view of America generally and the importance of it, which does implicate their view of our border and the importance or non-importance of it. Sam Stone and I will pick up on those spokes from that call from Heather when we come right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, coming to you from the 960 Patriot Broadcast Studios, which are brought to you by the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group, your trusted source for precious metals. Sam Stone is my in-studio guest, taking us through our afternoon with me and y'all. And we had a really interesting call from, was it Heather in Goodyear?
Yes.
In the previous segment, having to do with some aspects of illegal immigration and
the releases of migrants on the streets of Phoenix and elsewhere that are being planned by the Biden administration.
And your answer was, yeah, go ahead.
Pardon me. Yeah. I'm going to correct myself.
Okay.
They're not migrants. They're illegal immigrants or illegal aliens. Let's use the correct terminology. I hate that even I get affected by how Democrats change language, but okay.
I want to come to that in a few minutes with an old a speech of Chuck Schumer's on that very point from 2009. We'll get back to that because you said so much in your response to Heather. I woke up to this issue when someone was talking to me about the generosity of America to illegal immigrants. And said, I have no problem with generosity, but how are our veterans faring right now? Do they wait in lines? Do they get the treatment they need? Is all the money there for the veteran services that the veterans tell us they need? Go down the line, right?
Look at New York City, right. Seattle, in Denver right now are the most egregious examples of this.
Right.
But these are places with very large homeless populations of U.S. citizens. Mm-hmm. They are guaranteeing housing to these illegal border crossers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, what?
Right.
Like, if you're sitting there and you're like, you know what? We have everyone in our country is well off. Right. We're all taken care of. There's nobody living on the streets. All of our veterans are in a good house and a good place. We have them in a good job. They're getting all the support and the physical therapy and everything else they need. And now we'd like to bring in some more people and help them. Right. I'd have a really tough time arguing against it at that point.
Of course.
I think probably most people would. They'd be like, well, you know what? It's good to be generous. It's good to take care of people. But we're not taking care of our own citizens.
Right.
Mental health issues are through the roof. Suicide through the roof. Violent crime through the roof. All of these things. And stop, you know, before any Democrat out there is like, oh, it's falling, you know. Okay, it went off an artificial spike in 2020, so let's erase 2020 and 2021, and then let's talk about what happened 2019 and earlier, and then again. All the metrics are bad. If that's your basis, all the metrics are bad. Economy's not good. People are struggling. Debt's through the roof. Personal debt, I mean, now. Not just our national debt, but people, the credit cards.
And with no savings.
With no savings.
Right.
Their savings are gone. Their credit cards are maxed. They're at the point of getting their vehicles repoed.
Right.
And it's like, oh, well, why don't we just help these people from another country who are coming here, not fleeing any kind of real thing.
Right.
99% of these people showing up at our border have no legitimate asylum claim. They're economic.
Right.
They're migrating for economic reasons. That is not a legitimate reason to enter
the
United States.
Because of
the
magnet you just described. Because we are providing services.
And everyone goes back. You hear the left all the time, well, yeah, you thought it was fine when it was white people arriving at Ellis Island. Well, here's the thing. No. Those people arriving at Ellis Island were many colors, for one. But for two, they were arriving to a country that said, you work or you starve.
Right. That's right.
There was no welfare.
Right.
There was no benefit.
There was no great society.
There was no great society.
No,
I mean, literally,
there was no deal and no
if you could find a soup kitchen, you were lucky.
Right.
Otherwise, you were on your own. And how many stories are there of someone getting off the boat with 15 cents in their pocket, not knowing anything, and then making a success themselves? They did. I welcome people who want to come to this country, work hard, achieve great things. But I don't believe we should be paying for them to do it.
The thing that economically woke me up, aside from the condition of the veterans that I was describing, is the cost of the education system that no one seems to want to talk about.
Oh, it's insane. It's insane.
It's possible that illegal immigration costs our public education system close to $70 billion. A lot of people use an $8 to $10 billion number.
No. That number is way
possible it's $70 billion.
Yeah.
given, yes.
I've seen various breakdowns of this that legitimately come in anywhere from 30 to 80.
It very well could be that cost. Center for Immigration Studies, Steve Camerata and Mark Krikorian and those guys, they put it up at 60.
I think they're probably reasonably accurate with that. Add in hospitals.
Right.
There's healthcare, a lot of that, right? All these folks who are coming are getting the equivalent of an Obamacare plan that we're paying for 100%. So that's a lot of cost also. The end of the day, the issue to me is very, very simple. I have no problem being welcoming to people who want to come here and succeed. We need to know who they are. It needs to be orderly and it needs to be tuned to the needs of this economy.
So the reason I said what you were saying in the previous segment had many spokes to this hub is I want to drive closer to the hub for a moment, if I can, with you, Sam Stone. The notion that the melting pot, as I was saying in my monologue, or as the DEI instruction at ASU gives out, is a racist notion. The idea that we have a border that's worthy of protecting implies the notion that we have a country that's worthy of protecting.
And a culture that's worthy of protecting.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Yes.
And this perhaps is an element of what drives the left's talking point that it used to be called – they used to declaim against American exceptionalism. Now they say it's America First, which is a hearkening to racism or some kind of dog whistle of racism. It's not that at all. It's that they truly believe, and if you listen, you don't have to listen that closely, but if you do listen seriously to the left in the Democratic Party, the AOCs and that type and that cohort, even the Bernie Sanderses in the Senate, you do hear this notion that there is nothing really that special about this place. And once you adopt that viewpoint, why would you think that the border matters at all or the status of your immigration matters at all?
You wouldn't. I mean, obviously, I would disagree with them on purely empirical grounds, right?
Of course.
I don't think the Americans are genetically superior to anybody. We're polyglots. We are mutts. We are the product of the rest of the world. So we're not genetically superior, but look at the fact that almost, like, I think it's 70% of the major inventions in the world in the last 50 years have come from this country. 70% of the innovation from one country,
right?
Europe innovates almost nothing. China innovates a very small amount. Japan innovates a very small amount. Nobody else innovates the way we have.
That's right.
Period. That's an American exceptionalism.
Right.
That is the result of that. At the end of the day, you're right. They don't believe this is a culture worth protecting. They don't believe this is a country worth protecting. And so to them, it's just throw it open. Why does it matter? I think that to believe that, you have to be either self-serving greed or you're stupid or you're evil. And I don't think there's really any other out for explaining where their positioning is on this, because at the end of the day, our country has achieved so many things to bring up the rest of the world. The entire world, people don't realize, for decades has been improving its quality of living as a result of what the United States has done in leading it.
That's right. And there's a reason Cuba and China don't have illegal immigration problems.
North Korea.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Sam Stone is most for today, but we got to play you some audio from 2009. So not that long ago, really the first year of the Barack Obama administration, from a 59-year-old senator. 59 years, you'd think your political views are pretty
well
shaped.
Fairly settled. Yeah.
This is Chuck Schumer in 2009.
The first of these seven principles is that illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. Until the American people are convinced that we will stop future flows of illegal immigration, we will make no progress on dealing with the millions of illegal immigrants who are here now and on rationalizing our system of legal immigration. It's plain and simple and unavoidable. When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration, which the American people overwhelmingly oppose. If you don't think it's illegal, you're not going to say it. I think it is illegal and wrong, and we have to change it. Above all else, the American people want their government to be serious about protecting the public, enforcing the rule of law, and creating a rational system of legal immigration that will proactively fit our needs rather than reactively responding to future waves of illegal immigration.
Okay, so 59-year-old Chuck Schumer says these are illegal immigrants and we should call them so. He says
it's wrong.
And that what they are doing is wrong.
Yes.
And that the euphemism undocumented worker is wrong to use because it conveys an unseriousness. Now, 2 weeks ago, when Joe Biden was working off 2009 Chuck Schumer talking points at his State of the Union and calling the alleged murderer of Lake and Riley an illegal, he corrected it within 3 days to say, I should have said undocumented, because the entire pressure of the Democratic Party says, no, you can't call them illegal. They have to be undocumented. What happened between 2009 and what happened to Chuck Schumer? Undocumented worker was the wrong phrase then. Today, it's the only phrase.
You know,
illegal was wrong then. Today, it's not so wrong.
I wish I had an explanation, because, you know, the easy excuse is, well, Donald Trump sort of fried their minds, right? I mean, literally, it's tedious. I think there's truth to that. I think COVID broke a lot of them also, I think, psychologically. But at the end of the day, with Chuck, I don't think it's either one of those things with Chuck Schumer. I think he's just a complete and utter sellout. In the world of selling human beings, there's a word for what he does.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
There's a word for
yes,
that.
Yes, there is.
I think that little of him at this point.
Yep.
I think all of them. I mean, AOC, for instance, let's go there for 2 seconds. This was the warrior, the outsider. Yep. I'm fighting the power.
Yep.
Now her entire role in Congress is to toe the party line for whatever they want. They are pathetic.
We have a special guest joining us, the aforementioned from my monologue, Professor Owen Anderson, star of Fox News and lawsuit against ASU, coming.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.